Hello, and welcome to the A's Pod, episode 3.5. As always, we are presented by the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship. Today, I am joined once again by Connor, and also coming back after his absence last week. Well, actually, all of us were absent last week, but coming back from a two-week absence. Dan, how you doing?
I am doing great, all things considered.
That was really convincing, man.
That's my radio voice. No, I mean, you know, look, I was really hoping Michigan could provide, you know, some much-needed respite from what has been just a terrible year. Obviously, has not. And but at least I don't have to see Ohio State Michigan promos all week on, you know, for Fox Big Noon Kickoff, because that's usually the worst part of the week leading up to the Michigan Ohio State game, quite frankly.
It's just being reminded that it's going to happen.
Exactly.
I feel that. Connor, yeah, how about you?
I'm with you guys. Like, I think one of my biggest pet peeves about that rivalry at this point is just like how much the media hypes it and how painful it is to see them hype it with Michigan clips from the 90s, and you're just like, we're all paint deeply aware of that, so it's nice to be spared some of that. But yeah, I'm fine. I'm supposed to plug my work here, so I will say that I write a totally non-sports related and also non-politics newsletter called A Lonely Impulse of Delight, which you can find at connorrosesouthern.substack.com. It's about stories and other fun things like that.
And we will have a link in the show notes for that as well. And you guys, I believe, did a podcast going through a frighteningly plausible, plausibly relevant topic of which assistants should stick around and which should be jettisoned if they decide to keep Harbaugh. We will be discussing that, the premise of that, at length in the next segment. But we'll also have yet another Michigan football podcast linked in the show notes as well. At this point, it's unclear if the season is over, but at the very least, the Ohio State game was obviously canceled. Earlier today, I'm pretty sure everyone who was listening to this is aware of that by this point. Michigan evidently had something like 45 players who were going to be unavailable for this game. Between injuries, COVID positives, and contact tracing. That is not entirely COVID positives. There are apparently 16 of those at the moment, although you imagine, given the number of other players out, unless there are there's an incredible rash of injuries, there are a lot of people in contact tracing that may end up turning into positives. So Michigan is in the midst of an outbreak. There was absolutely no way they were going to be able to safely play the Ohio State game. And now there's some word that they might finagle a way into rescheduling it, and who knows if Michigan is going to want to play in whatever matchup is, or whether the Big Ten is going to want anybody to play in any matchups that are made other than the title game for next weekend. But I think the feeling for right now is mostly relief. And obviously concern for everyone who has COVID.
Yeah, I mean, obviously concern, you know, I mean, that goes without saying. I feel like all of our takes this year tend to just sort of assume that we tend to talk about COVID in like a very like matter-of-fact way, because that's just sort of how we have to talk about it given the circumstances of this season. But, you know, that goes without saying that, you know, the first priority is, you know, the health of the players and all that. You know, but that said, like, I don't even think I was dreading or looking forward to the Ohio State game, to be completely honest, because I really felt that, like, at this point there's so many people hurt, and like we're down to like our third string quarterback, and like it's just such a mess that like I was not even gonna be like bummed or angry about losing 77-0. You know, I was just kind of like, it was just a thing that was going to happen. So, you know, whatever. It's the right move. I'm glad that they're not playing.
Yeah, I have to wildly disagree with Dan. I'm devastated that we're not playing, because Michigan would have won.
we are right. Looking into printing shirts. So that, yeah. other than, you know, missing out on Dan Vellari's glorious, you know, upset victory.
I wanted to see Vellari, you know, our large son from Long Island, just galloping through the Ohio State secondary with these, you know, these small modern defensive backs bouncing off him as he careens into the end zone. It was going to happen, folks.
Bringing that GTL magic to Michigan Stadium. Since, you know, the student section hasn't been open this year.
The greatest victory for Italian Americans since The Sopranos went off the air.
And sadly, we will be missing it. Okay, with those quick feelings that were, you know, pretty obvious from us out of the way, I currently have on the screen that I probably should not actually be looking at playing in front of me, Ohio State is currently fourth in the college football playoff rankings that just got put on the screen like 2 minutes ago. But at the moment, if the season ends and the rules hold, they would be ineligible for the Big Ten championship game. It does seem like there is a lot of room from the Big Ten for changing the barrier for entry. They released a statement today that left things very open-ended and pretty much explicitly mentioned that they are looking at, you know, what the requirements are going to be for making the title game. Ohio State is very clearly the best team in the Big Ten. They did beat Indiana. There was also a rule heading into the season that may have impacted how teams kind of went about their seasons. Are we rule sticklers, or do we think that the Big Ten should bend them a little bit? Dan, I'll start with you.
So I want to start this off by saying that obviously if Ohio State is unable to play in the Big Ten championship game and that costs them an opportunity to play in the playoff, I will laugh, and that will be very funny for me. I'm not going to shed any tears for the great unfairness that is being done unto Ohio State, the protagonists, you know, of their own story. I also, you know, I will also laugh like if and when they get beat by Clemson or Alabama, because that's what you do in a rivalry. No matter how bad you're getting your own ass kicked, you know, there's still room to laugh at the other guy. So all that said, I mean, but this is an obvious decision. I mean, it's just that there's a rule that they came up with before the season, and it was put in place to try to avoid a situation where like a 2-0, you know, Rutgers could, or 2-0 Indiana could get into the title game over like a 5-1 Ohio State or whatever. And given the situation, like Ohio State had three games canceled, but only one of them was their fault. They beat Indiana, the only other team that is competing for the East, and they're clearly the best team. And it would be stupid to have anyone else win the Big Ten this year. I mean, and that's all there is to it. I mean, I just don't, any argument other, like, I understand being upset that the Big Ten is bending their rules for Ohio State, and trust me, I get that, you know, but I don't think that, I mean, first of all, they were stupid rules to begin with. They were rules that incentivized trying to play with COVID, yes. And they never should have been in place. And, you know, given the specific circumstance, like, yeah, like, they should bend the rules. They should make sure that the best team plays the Big Ten championship and that has an opportunity to go to the playoff. Especially since it wasn't even Ohio State's fault that two of their games were canceled. So, I don't know, as much as I hate the words coming out of my mouth, like, yeah, obvious, any argument against it just feels like, you know, mostly Indiana fans that are kind of somewhat rightfully upset that.
And Michigan fans, because, you know, we don't like Ohio State. And like you said, very clearly, like, it would be hilarious if they were kept out. It would be it'd be the funniest thing that could happen this season. It would be an early Christmas gift. Like, I mean, happy Hanukkah, any holiday you celebrate, it'd be glorious. At the same time, really the only thing I have to add to what you said is that I have seen some people suggest that the Big Ten is only bending this because it is Ohio State. No, they would absolutely be doing this for Michigan too.
Only those two schools, because those schools are, like, frankly, way more important than anyone else in the Big Ten to the Big Ten. That's just the reality.
Yes. And Ohio State happens to be the one that has maintained that standing, so it does seem like everything breaks their way because they're good. And sorry that sucks, but that's where we're at right now.
Can I push back on that, though, real quick?
Yeah.
I just want to say that if that is true, they're only bending this because it's Ohio State. But here's the thing. Like, any hypothetical where you say, oh, what if the roles were reversed? You know, and Indiana was number four in the country, and Ohio State was having, you know, sort of a plucky underdog season. Here's the thing. In that situation, then it would not be Ohio State. Like, they're doing this because Ohio State's good and has the best chance of actually winning a playoff game. Honestly, I think that if the situation was reversed and, you know, Indiana was clearly the best team in the Big Ten, I think they would bend the rules for Indiana.
No, I do. I do agree that given the situation where not only have they played a pretty darn similar amount of games, you know, this is not the like 3 or 4 game gap that they were probably envisioning when they put this rule in, but you've got a head-to-head win. And that really, I think that takes a lot of the debate out of this one. Connor, do you have any disagreements, anything you want to add?
I do have a disagreement, which is the actual funniest scenario here would not be rules technicalities forcing Ohio State out. It would be if Northwestern soon come under the Vajayan Imperial era actually beat them in the Big Ten title game. So I'm holding out hope for that. Not because I think Northwestern is better overall, but because I still do think that Ohio State's at least a little bit overrated and hasn't played up to their talent once again. And so, you know, there's still some hope that they could get knocked out of the playoffs in hilarious fashion. I'm holding out for that.
Yeah, that secondary is shaky, and I will happily stand corrected that Northwestern beating Ohio State straight up would absolutely be the funniest outcome. So we do have a couple, you know, shot and Freud possibilities on the table here. And at this point, that's about as much as Michigan can hope for right now. And I assume we all agree that Michigan should in no way try to reschedule this football game.
I mean, yeah, no. That would be... Michigan doesn't have a team right now. They're not going to be practicing. They shouldn't be trying to play the December 19th game either. They should just be calling the season off at this point. I mean, it's silly.
Yeah, I mean, even just from like a health of... several walk-ons will be starting if they try to play this game. And that's just not like safe for anyone. Quite frankly.
Yeah, I don't see the point in trying to do it. It just, I mean, it seems like even if they did try, they'd probably end up being forced out of it, like what's happened the last 2 weeks, because they certainly were trying to play these games. But yeah, let's hope that they just decide to end this cursed season. Whether the Big Ten does it for them or Michigan does it themselves. And hopefully we can move on pretty quickly to the other thing looming over the program, which we are going to talk about right after this break.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters and venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516. Or email jason@blankenshiplawyer.com.
Hello,
So a lot of news came in over the last few days about, well, I don't want to say news. Let's go with rumors. Let's go with talk about a potential Jim Harbaugh extension. Starting with, I want to kind of cite Chris Ballas and Sam Webb have both discussed that Michigan was moving towards an extension, not necessarily that it was certain, not putting out terms, which is kind of important because the terms, I think, will dictate a lot of how this goes, based on whether or not they're insulting. And then now we've gotten word that directly from Ward Manuel, so this is news, in his press conference that he and Harbaugh have not discussed an extension, and the plan, at least as he is saying publicly, is to string this out until after the season is over, which, as they consider it right now, is unfortunately December 19th. So it seems like there are kind of two paths here. One is we're completely boned because this is all real and they're doing this and they're going to somehow wait past signing day, which is the 16th, to get this extension done and manage to kind of do the worst of both worlds of retaining Harbaugh while still destroying recruiting. Or they are slowly pushing Harbaugh out in a way that lets him save some face, and unfortunately for the moment, that looks a lot like screwing the entire coaching search up, but that's what you have to do to kill time while waiting for, say, Matt Campbell's season to finish.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Ace. Like, I do think that something to keep in mind, and, you know, far be it from me to, you know, sort of stand, like, these kind of overpaid administrators. I'm not going to try to act like I think that, you know, Ward Manuel is definitely doing the smartest thing. But I would say that, like, if they were going to fire Harbaugh, it would probably look a lot like they were botching it. You know, it would probably look a lot like they are sort of looking to extend him, but not doing it quickly enough. And that's kind of, like, hard to, you know, grin and bear right now. But in the event that they are trying to push Harbaugh out, I think that it's possible that Ward Manuel is doing the right thing. Then again, I wouldn't put it past Michigan to just be totally screwing this up.
Yeah, I think where I'm at with this is it seems clear, or at least very likely, that Harbaugh has the option to come back as the head coach, and that potentially the offer that's on the table will be for a brief extension at a much lower base salary with a lot of strings attached as far as, like, incentives making it clear, like, Jim, you can earn more money and get more years, but you have to beat Ohio State and win some games and do things right and not just harumph all the time at us. And I think that, yeah, as we said, that may ultimately lead to a sort of passive-aggressive pushing out of Harbaugh that could transpire in the next couple of weeks here. I want to underline the key point here, which is that, you know, my fear is that Michigan is in fact arrogant enough that all the most negative fans and the haters are kind of right, and that Michigan's institutional arrogance is such that the athletic department believes it can sort of operate in a reality of its choosing rather than staring down the reality of the single most important thing in trying to win in college football is recruiting, and you're going to really hurt recruiting by stringing this out any longer than necessary, especially if you do it like 4 days after signing day because of some combination of pride and technicality. And I hope I'm wrong about all that, and there really is like a Machiavellian level of scheming happening here. But there are times recently when you just have to feel like maybe Michigan's institutional arrogance really is just that astronomical, and I don't know what to say about it. So that's where I am right now.
Yeah, no, I absolutely feel that. And it feels like there are, like, both scenarios feel equally plausible. It doesn't necessarily feel like they're, because, like, on the one hand, there's, like, Ward Manuel handling it correctly is, like, just takes having, like, a reasonable sense of what would happen to the program if he extended Harbaugh, which is, like, in almost all likelihood disaster, as we've been over. So, like, do we think the Ward Manual is smart enough to handle this? It seems like a reasonable thing to conclude, and that the man's hired Mel Pearson and Juwan Howard, and as obvious as those hires might have been, he did it. Those were the correct moves, and he made them. On the other hand, Michigan having a crap ton of institutional arrogance to the point where they have shot themselves in the foot repeatedly with coaching searches, there's a history to that. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like, and it's a history that I think would be foolish to ignore. So it does, it's tough to figure out because, we were discussing, as Dan mentioned earlier, that, when we were kind of doing our group chat thing, I think this was even last week, we were talking about how Manuel doing the right thing and Manuel totally botching it are going to look very, very similar until pretty much the very end. Unless he announces an extension early, which is apparently not happening. So now we are unfortunately in this protracted waiting period where, I don't know, it seems like we're going to hear a lot of conflicting rumors. There have been some NFL rumors about how something like 5 teams have reached out to him. I think that's also coming from the Michigan end as well, that he's been hearing from some NFL teams. Michigan insidery end, obviously, not officially Michigan end. They don't do these things. But, I mean, obviously the last time we got a lot of smoke from at least one side of the NFL versus Michigan insider split. I don't know whether it's going to be as cleanly divided down the middle as it was last time and as cleanly becoming obvious which side was actually plugged in as we started to get. So, I don't know, we just have to see whether this is, Ward being crafty enough for, either the Jets' job to open up officially or the Lions to get through their hiring process or the Big 12 title game to end and Matt Campbell to feel comfortable going public with something. I don't know. I want to talk myself into it so bad.
Yeah, so I kind of have, a little bit of a... I can see a way that this is Ward doing, I don't know, at least halfway doing the right thing. Because I get where, if I was in charge of this, Harbaugh would have been fired after the Penn State game, and Gattis would have been the interim head coach, and we would have, already been doing back-channel deals with, Matt Campbell. And finding out if Matt Campbell's interested, because, we've been talking about him as the guy, but, it's possible that he just doesn't want to come. So, but we'd be getting that process underway and getting a head start on that process. but I do, to a certain extent, understand if Ward Manuel offered Jim Harbaugh a reduced salary deal, in a way to allow Jim Harbaugh to save face, or, at worst case, get Jim Harbaugh back for a much reduced rate with a totally redone staff. Because I think there is a certain level of, they don't necessarily want, and you can call this Michigan's institutional arrogance, but I don't think they want to publicly embarrass Jim Harbaugh as an alumni, a proud alumni, someone who, no matter what you say, loves Michigan and came here to coach and, came in with a lot of pressure on him. And what I think about the job that he's done, especially the past few years. But I do understand the sentiment that they don't want to publicly embarrass him by just leaving him on the tarmac. So I think... if this is if this is something to allow Jim Harbaugh to save face, which I'm not saying it definitely is, I do, I see the benefits in that, even if I don't totally agree with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's tricky for me right now is I obviously went off about institutional arrogance, and I kind of want to reel that back in and say, like, we're talking about this in the next segment, and I don't that I and you guys don't think that it's, like, impossible to win at Michigan because of Michigan's sort of accursed culture or whatever. But I do think that the way that it played out today, we canceled the game, which, like, was the right move. I was fine with it. It was hilarious. We got to make fun of mad Ohio State people on Twitter.
That's the most important part.
That was really enjoyable, actually. And then the Ward stuff about, like, we'll discuss this when the season ends on December 19th. And it's just sort of the way that one technicality, which is signing day being the 16th, aligns with the other technicality of us saying the season ends on the 19th. Which, by the way, I'm kind of mad at the NCAA that, like, signing day isn't, like, you know, January 1st or whatever. Like, we at least push it to the end of all the seasons. But regardless, I guess it's just – that's a relatively small point. But I just think that the way it's being handled right now is going to do some damage to recruiting. And I will say that, obviously, any coaching tumult is going to do damage to recruiting. I'm just mad at a personal level right now because Michigan actually has put together a good class. And it's just so annoying to see, on top of everything else we have to deal with, to see, like, this sort of, like, high and mighty talk of, like, we're going to discuss this 3 days after we lose, you know, a bunch of our top recruits. Whether or not that's part of a better grand scheme, that just personally frustrates me. So I should reel my take about arrogance back in and just say it's, like, it's one more thing that is causing me some despair as a fan, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's an especially fair point because we're talking about also, you know, you're not just talking about bringing recruits into the program, you're talking about convincing people to come and attend the school under a certain pretense, which is that Jim Harbaugh is going to be their coach, and then possibly 3 days later turning around and firing him. Like, that's no good from a, like, both a moral and optics standpoint. That's not going to help anything. So I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they really stick. Like, obviously, like, the other thing we got to discuss here is that Ward Manuel may not do exactly what he is currently telling the media.
Like, that's true, too. Yeah.
It would be far from the first time that someone in his position, especially given, like Dan said, how kind of delicate this is, because Jim Harbaugh did give, you know, 6 years to this program as a coach, you know, five more as a player, including one where he broke an arm that's still bent. Like, you know, the dude's given a lot to Michigan. There's no question about it. And, you know, it's not like I don't think Michigan owes him a ton. They've paid him a lot of money for what he's done for this program the last 6 years. At the same time, both in terms of doing right by somebody who has, you know, it's not like Jim Harbaugh is trying to sabotage the program. Like, this is a guy who loves Michigan and wants to succeed. It just hasn't gone well. And also because you want other coaches, maybe even coaches from, you know, outside of the Michigan family, to look at the athletic department and the environment here and say, they have their act together. That's a place that's going to treat me well. And that's going to be a place that treats me well, whether it goes well or whether it goes poorly. And that's something that's a precedent that Ward Manuel is going to be setting for his administration, at least when it comes to the football program, because his major hires before this, you know, Red Berenson retired and John Beilein left for the NBA. Those were not things that were in his hands. So this is going to be his first potential major program firing, and that, you know, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on how that's handled.
Yeah, and I think that's something, that's a good point, Ace, and I'll try not to be too long-winded here, but, you know, we talk about, like, oh, what coach, you know, there's kind of this line of thinking that I tend to disagree with, where it's like, oh, you know, what coach would want to come here, it's such a hard job, blah, 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 and we'll talk a little bit about why, you know, we disagree with that, but, I think that something that would definitely discourage coaches from coming to Michigan to a certain extent is if you took a guy that was a beloved, you know, star quarterback at your school, came back as, you know, and was hailed as the savior and everyone, you know, couldn't have been more excited, and then you just, you know, leave him out in the cold and sort of publicly embarrass him. Because that's going to be, like, you know, if I'm Matt Campbell, I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, if I don't, you know, show immediate results here, like, that's how they treated their guy. Like, what are they going to do to me? So I do think that there's, you know, you might not want to hear it. You might be kind of sick of Harbaugh like I am, but you don't necessarily want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, like, you know, the programs that we associate with, you know, tarmac firings or chasing Lane Kiffin out of town, these both involve Lane Kiffin. You know, things haven't gone great for Tennessee and USC. And there have been, you know, pretty prominent coaches who have turned down those gigs, and also less prominent coaches who have turned down those gigs. And I think it's in part because of, you know, how those athletic departments have handled things in public very prominently with their coaches on the way out. So I think there's a certain good aspect to the Michigan does things differently approach here, which is that you're not going to, you know, have them do something that kind of scares away both, you know, scares away, like, alienates Harbaugh and scares away other coaches from maybe wanting this job, because it seems like a nightmare environment.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's well summed up. And I think that, like, one thing I'll say in Ward's favor is, I think, you know, he's in the position of having to try to keep a cool head at a time when it's very, very hard to keep a cool head about Michigan football, and we're all under severe pandemic fatigue, and we're all going a little bit crazy. I mean, not Dan. Dan's been level-headed throughout this, but...
Absolutely.
Yeah. If there's one thing I'm not, it's mad.
Tell you what, we're not as mad as the Ohio State Twitter people right now. I'm going to underline that point again.
Yeah, really.
We passed the point of, you know, caring so long ago, and they're still so deeply invested that we just get to... we're like, oh, basketball's happening, and ha-ha-ha, look at you. It's a good point to add that, like, the frustration that has maybe less to do with the specific circumstances of this current coaching situation, you know, it may be contributing to our anger about it. The general, please fire him on the tarmac mentality. And that's something that I've definitely tweeted during games this season. So I've not been above that in any way whatsoever. But it is something that's probably worth appreciating, is that at the very least, Ward Manuel is not being rash here. And while you certainly would like to see the situation taken care of in a timing that can work, there are transition costs in every coaching search, and this is a particularly strange year. You know, we've discussed the unfortunate timing of the, you know, National Signing Day not being realigned when the season was. So now we've got a situation where those things just might not necessarily line up the way you'd want, and there might be either a gap between firing a head coach and hiring one that's longer than you'd like, or waiting longer to announce it than you'd like, or just having to bite the bullet on it and do some sort of pseudo extension. So we'll see how it goes. We will obviously talk a lot more about how it plays out, but up next we wanted to kind of talk about the job in general and what the environment is for it, and whether the discussion about what it's like to coach at Michigan is necessarily reflective of the reality.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters and venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516. Or email jason@blankenshiplawyer.com.
Christmas will break your heart if your world is feeling small and there's no one on your phone. You feel close enough to call. And Christmas will crush your soul like that laid back rock and roll. But your body's getting old, and it's much too tired to be so bold. Christmas can wreck your head like some listless, awkward sex. So you refuse to leave your bed and get depressed when no one checks. Christmas will break.
So this is our Stephen A. Smith, we want to address this topic segment, because there is a certain mindset, I think, more among Michigan fans than people outside of Michigan, although I have seen it come from, you know, a certain more trolly other fans, but it mostly seems to emanate from within. And I do understand the self-hatred, don't get me wrong. But there's this idea that Michigan has made itself a little bit too exceptional in that if you want to accomplish all the goals that this football program and athletic department want to accomplish in terms of success both on and off the field and what they're looking for in a head coach and all of that, that the ceiling is much lower on this team and program than it used to be, and the reality is you can probably kind of give up on being on the level with Ohio State or close to it, and the focus should be more on beating Michigan State regularly and being, you know, as good or hopefully a little better than the Wisconsins and Iowas and maybe Penn States of the world. And I think I can guess how we all feel about this initially, but I'm pretty sure Dan has the strongest feelings about this, so I want to hand it off to him first.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I feel like I love how you guys like start every segment off now with just like, all right, let's let Dan tire himself out. But I will. I will absolutely take you up on that.
It's like letting a dog out into the backyard for a while.
Exactly. It's like, okay, let him run around. We'll cut this out. But, you know, I just think, like, I guess I just don't understand it. I don't understand why, you know, people think that this program can't be more than it has been in the past, you know, in the past 2 decades. Well, I guess, you know, 15 years, whatever you, however you want to cut it up. But I think that from a rival fan's perspective, you know, you always heard about how, you know, Jim Harbaugh was overrated, and Michigan wasn't playing up to his talent under him, and you know that was always played out a little bit up until this year, really. But then on the other hand, you would hear about how, like, oh well, Michigan really, you know, this is where they've historically been, and you know, to expect more than this is really being delusional, and you know, it can't be both. So I mean, you know, so like I just don't understand, like, Michigan is inarguably, it is one of the, you know, 5, 6, 7 programs, even, I'm not even going to say 10, because there's not 10, programs that consistently get national attention and are, you know, enormous brands that carry their own weight. I mean, it's noted, like, when something happens at Notre Dame, it's on SportsCenter. When something happens at Ohio State or Alabama, it's on SportsCenter. And when something happens at Michigan, it's on SportsCenter. Like, I couldn't get away from Michigan coverage this year, even when they sucked. and I couldn't get away from it when they were, you know, like, even more boringly bad under Brady Hoke. Because
they were exceptionally excitingly bad in 2014. Let's get real about that.
That's true.
But even those like 8 and 5 years, like, it's always something. They're always on TV. And, you know, the brand isn't everything. The brand doesn't create its own national powerhouse football program. But it does carry, you know, it does sustain a program in a certain way that, you know, it's hard to really fall off the map forever. For people that say, like, oh, you know, Michigan is stuck here, this is where we're going to be forever, like, I don't understand how you can look at what Michigan is as a program right now, in terms of, like, the talent that they've had and the way that we all feel it's been misused, and say, like, yeah, this is, like, the best they can do. Like, that doesn't compute with me. Because, like, we've all been complaining about Harbaugh for the past 3 years, and it's, like, or the past 4 years, whatever you want to say, about, you know, things that we feel that he should do differently. And, like, even through all of that, they had reasonable success. So, yeah, like, I think that if Michigan finds a great coach, they can be, you know, a top 10 consistently program. You know, maybe they're not Ohio State and they're not Alabama, but they can be, you know, I don't know, Oklahoma level or whatever. Like, it's the,
I mean, they have been. They have been top 10 the last few years.
Yeah, they have. I mean, it's, yeah. Exactly.
They were a play away from getting into the Big Ten title game and probably the playoff after that 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It has not been that long.
Yeah, exactly. So it just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand why, you know, it's been a long time. I mean, well, first of all, it hasn't really been a long time. Like you said, it was 2016. It's been a long time since Michigan, like, you know, was truly, truly in the national spotlight, and been a long time since Michigan beat Ohio State. And, you know, getting over the Ohio State hump with any kind of consistency is going to be, you know, like, a not insignificant challenge. I'm not saying it's easy. But, like, yeah, Michigan shouldn't stop looking for the right coach. I mean, there are programs out there that, like, I mean, Michigan is always 1 or 2 years under the right coach away from being a national power. And, you know, that might sound, like, arrogant or stupid, and, like, I'm sure that's the kind of thing that, like, Michigan State fans make fun of us for believing, but it's just true. Like, if Michigan hires the right coach, they'll be back within 2 or 3 years. And Michigan fans shouldn't let, you know, what has been our special hell for the last, you know, 10 years cause them to ignore, like, what a powerful brand and how many resources and, you know, how much of a cachet Michigan carries on a national stage. So I don't know. That was a little bit rambly, but, like, it does annoy me, and it just doesn't make any sense to me.
So I think I appreciate you handing the baton off there, because I want to give people a history lesson. You raised this. First of all, you're the young guy here, Dan. It's been more than 10 years, right? I mean, the Michigan, you know, the sort of streak of feeling like it's futile to fight against Ohio State goes back to the early 2000s. And if you think about when it started to feel like Michigan was kind of cursed, it was around 2004, 2005, when they were either directly competitive with Ohio State or had a better team and still couldn't beat them. And then that's just been compounded since then for the most part. But think about who was a big deal in college football in 2005. The two biggest teams back then, USC and Texas. Look at those teams right now. Okay? That's how long it's been. All right? And Ohio State, in that rant, the reason it's maddening and why it's legitimate to feel maddened, Michigan's been in a maddening spot for this century. Ohio State's had a more unbroken run of elite coaches, aside from one interim year with a guy that's turned out to be an elite coach, Luke Fickell. Tressel to Urban to Ryan Day. Alabama hasn't had a run like that. That's almost gone 20 years. Clemson hasn't. Literally no one has. I mean, the teams that felt like they were invincible back in the early 2000s when Tressel was a big deal, a lot of them are. I mean, when's the last time you heard something about USC? Like, your point about national brands. USC has faded immensely. They're still a blue blood, but, like, they don't have the cachet that Michigan or Notre Dame does, even when they're down. And so, yeah, I mean, the durability of Michigan through this unbelievably cursed-feeling stretch where your arch rival is somehow always amazing, where your secondary rival has, like, their maybe best era of their entire history to concurrent with that, Where even like a team like Wisconsin that you have to play every year for some stupid reason is like having a great historic period. It's infuriating. It's maddening. And yet we're still here, where Michigan is still pulling in top 10 recruiting classes despite a disorganized, weird recruiting operation that doesn't prioritize certain key positions. where like the organization feels like it's in disarray, and yet Michigan still pulls in national recruits. They still steal recruits from like, you know, sort of 1B blue bloods like Florida State. They, as you pointed out very astutely, they're only a year or two away under the right circumstances from being in the playoff hunt and in title contention just based on what they have currently. And so I totally get the sort of the despair of Michigan fans, but I think it's very presentist in the sense that it's like, it's a long present, right? Our nightmare has gone on for such a long time with barely any breaks. But the reality is we've been resilient through that nightmare. And Michigan is still a huge deal that recruits well and has all the things that other schools envy short of the sort of top tier results. And that should be celebrated, that like we're still there and we can still get back to the very top. So no, I don't think Michigan's cursed. I also want to add one final point here, which is that I think the critique of like Michigan can't get recruits who are like, you know, academically hopeless was probably a lot more salient like 25 years ago. In the IMG era, there actually aren't that many recruits that are academically hopeless. So I'm kind of sick of hearing that. Like most of these guys can like do their homework with all the help they get from a school like Michigan.
Yeah, also to add to that point, and I certainly agree with a lot of what you just said. Michigan does not have the same restrictions that like Notre Dame or Stanford does. They just don't. And Notre Dame's in the playoff this year, as it currently stands, and beat Clemson, and is recruiting at a very high level. They are, you know, going by 247's composite team talent rankings. Notre Dame's eighth. And Michigan is 17th, and that is after some recruiting classes that we have deemed somewhere between disappointing and wildly disappointing, at least when looking at filling across positions and getting kind of the top level talent that you expect Michigan to get. Their historical norms are above this. They have been, I'm looking at Bill Connolly's SP Plus history for Michigan, and they were a 90th percentile program, you know, all the way up until from Bo all the way through until the end of Carr. Even Carr's down years barely dipped below the 90th percentile. And then, you know, obviously bottomed out a little bit in 2008, and then they even got back up to the 90th percentile under Brady Hoke, briefly. and then Jim Harbaugh has had them, you know, above that level for the first 4 years of his tenure before things started dropping off a little bit last year, then obviously in a much bigger way this year. Before that, other than Bump Elliott and a couple other random years, this has always been a great program. And obviously, I mean, you sort of throw out the pre-war stuff in terms of relevance to modern college football.
Don't let Seth hear you say that.
I know. And I mean, you can't throw it out entirely because those national championships still count and those wins still count. And when you're talking to recruits, the sheer mass of them does add up a little bit. The funny thing is that Michigan has actually been a more consistent winning program since Bo came in than they were before that, even though they've only had one national title since Bo Schembechler came. He just had one of the most remarkable runs of somehow not winning a national championship. And a lot of that was bad luck and a little bit of his own doing. But that's not here nor there necessarily.
Actually, I didn't know if you know this, Ace, but college football actually began the second that Michigan State joined the Big Ten. coincidentally, right when they, you know, before the Civil Rights Act was signed, but right when they went on, you know, their historic run of the best football they would ever play in the history of their program.
By recruiting the players from Texas that Texas wouldn't let into their own university. Yeah,
exactly. And so, you know, that's and then once you do that, we only lead the series, the all-time series, by 10 games.
I appreciate that we got some of that in, even during this otherwise kind of bleak segment. But it does, like Michigan has competed at a high level in modern college football. We have discussed Jim Harbaugh's specific disorganized recruiting staff and recruiting practices and the deficiencies there and how important those are to consistently keeping an elite program instead of just a good one in, you know, kind of this modern college football landscape. We've also been talking about how Michigan's a prominent program. I do still have the TV on in the background, and Ward Manuel's quote is coming across the bottom line on ESPN. This is him saying that Jim Harbaugh is not going to discuss an extension with them until after the season is national news, which points to what we're talking about. There are, maybe 15 programs that get the same level of attention or more, because Michigan, I mean, even among some of the blue bloods right now, if you look at the history of, say, LSU or Florida, or Auburn, at least the blue bloods in terms of who's bringing in talent, those are not necessarily schools that have always been playing at an extremely high level. Clemson is a great example.
Yeah.
Clemson is historically kind of a loser, and is now so firmly among powerhouses that I actually forgot to mention them as the most obvious example of a non-historic powerhouse. So Michigan can absolutely get back up there. And I think, they've gotten in their own way a lot of the times over the years between, I don't know, letting Dave Brandon run in the athletic department for a while and hire Brady Hoke. That wasn't great. The Rich Rodriguez stuff was obviously botched too at the end. At the beginning with him and at the end of the Carr era. And Michigan just has they botched their initial attempt to modernize the program, and that seemed to scare them off from modernizing the program. And then they hired a guy who it seemed like it kind of split the difference, and also seemed like the perfect cultural fit, and it hasn't worked. There's just too many obvious things to fix to be able to say that there's some mystical thing about the Michigan job that makes it different from all these other coaching gigs at institutions that are currently playing high level football.
Yeah, I mean, and as someone who Dan and I followed recruiting really closely this summer, which is a bad idea because then what happens is the guys you get excited about that are going to flip on signing day. But neither here nor there. That's a lesson learned. But I think one thing that you notice with recruits is somehow, even with these 17, 18-year-old kids, they're still really into the Michigan brand, a lot of them. Whether they're actually going to come or not, the ones that Michigan's in on, they're still digging it. They know Charles Woodson is, even though he left Michigan years before they were born. Which I think is just incredible, honestly. It probably helps that guys like Woodson and Desmond Howard are on TV and stuff like that. And it helps that...
Oh, it absolutely does. But yeah, they're there in large part because of the prominence of Michigan's program and the fact that both those guys won Heismans. So,
right.
That does speak to... That absolutely speaks to recruits, and as does, the lavish facilities on campus. I mean, in the fact that Michigan can pay... if we're talking about being able to succeed... Michigan can hold their own financially with with any athletic department in the country, if we're being real about it. I mean, we have discussed the Michigan money cannon in regards to our fan base, but it also definitely extends to the actual athletic department and, say, certain billionaire donors that Michigan has, a phone call away. So, And Michigan, it's not just that they have the capability of doing that. They have paid for high-level facilities. They have redone the weight room. I lost count how many times by now, because it seems to change every time a new coach comes in. And they have paid Jim Harbaugh an extremely competitive salary. So, yeah, I'm not seeing anything other than like a certain somewhat understandable malaise in the Michigan fan base, and that's keeping them from expecting Michigan to be able to be nationally competitive. Are they going to immediately get on Ohio State's level? No. But could they get back and compete with them? Yes, they were competing with them a couple of years ago. It really has not been long.
Yeah, I think I just want, like, to sum it all up, like, if someone tells you that, you know, this is Michigan's ceiling, and that, you know, they'll never compete nationally or whatever, like, I just want them to explain that to me in terms other than, like, oh, there's something magic about Michigan that keeps them from doing so. You know, it's, and I guarantee you that that person will struggle to, like, actually articulate why that is. There's just nothing holding it back other than, you know, the hires that they've made. And, you know, some of those seemed like good ideas at the time. Some of them we can debate. But, yeah, that's my last point.
So Alabama went through an extended malaise before hiring Nick Saban, because they had three straight bad head coaching hires where the only one who win did it by so blatantly cheating that they actually managed to get put on probation.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I've noticed is that people who say, like, oh, Michigan's cursed, like, if you do what Dan said and you kind of push at them and ask them why, first of all, I'll say they were saying that about Notre Dame like 2 years ago, and now Notre Dame is going to be in the college football playoff for like the second time in 3 years. But also, those are the people that don't seem to realize that Michigan recruits nationally. Like, they don't actually know the structure of the program. Once you get into the weeds of what Michigan is doing, your frustration then becomes at the coaches for not making the most of the opportunities and talent they've had, rather than at, like, oh, nothing Michigan does ever works. A lot of things work. They just don't add up to beating Ohio State. And that's where we need to get to.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it makes it tougher when you're looking at your primary rival being in the playoff pretty much annually and winning the conference pretty much annually, and seemingly falling into elite coaches. Although, we'll see. You never know with Ryan Day. But I think I want to end this on noting that Ohio State fans of a certain age are actually the ones who seemingly have the best perspective on the Michigan program right now, which is that they're a dormant power. Because anybody who's around my age or older remembers a time when this dynamic between Michigan and Ohio State was totally flipped on its head, and Ohio State could almost never beat Michigan. And this was less explicable because Ohio State still had extremely good teams throughout this entire period. And then things changed seemingly overnight on that front when Ohio State fired a pretty darn successful coach in everything but beating Michigan, and John Cooper, and replacing him with a 1AA coach from Youngstown, who I know if Twitter had been around and Ohio State had reached down to Youngstown State to grab a head coach, a lot of people would have said some things that would have been screenshotted for old takes exposed type purposes. And I'm sure it was in some circles widely criticized at the time. I was not a part of the wider college football discourse in 2001 or 1999 or whatever it was when he got hired. So it feels bleak, but, you know, it felt bleak to those Ohio State fans for a really long time. And then obviously things turned around in a pretty spectacular way for them. And I don't know if it's obviously going to go in exactly that same kind of way for Michigan, but these things do go in waves. Like, and even like Ohio State's seemingly unstoppable, extremely good thing, it could peter out at some point. We, you know, it's very hard to predict how these things play out. And one thing that college football has proven time and again is that nobody stays at the top forever. So we'll see where it goes. With that, thank you for listening to the Ace Pod. We are brought to you, as always, by the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship. Thank you to Dan and Connor for joining me tonight. Cue the music.